We'd like to call the meeting of the Early Childhood Finance Learning Committee to order. Members, we're going to try to run on time. We have three bills today. Representative Bly, Representative Kranz, and Representative Portman. And we will be hearing each of those. Oh, and Representative Fritz as well. Four bills that we will be hearing. And first of all, we would like to do approval of the minutes. Representative Kranz, have you read the minutes?
Yes, I have. I'd love to make that motion.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kranz, whose approval of the minutes for February 8th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 8th are approved. The first bill we're going to have for our consideration is House File Number 5, Representative Bly. And Representative Bly, are you ready?
Yes, I'd like to move for consideration House File Number 5 for the committee to discuss and consider. And I believe you all have in your packets the copies of the bill and the bill summary, as well as the financial note. The Section 1 talks about the increases that the school district for ECFE and for Head Start and for school readiness. Section 2 deals with the amount of the aid and 3 the appropriations from Department of Education and then to Head Start. So, and the reason for this bill, I think that we've heard a lot about, you know, in this committee and in the media about how important being able to reach those students those young children that struggle and how getting them early and doing what you can to help them be ready for school is very important and is a good investment that we should all be willing to take on and we will benefit later in years to come from the investments we make now.
Representative Bly, would you like to have your testifiers
come
forward?
Yes, I would like to. I have two people from my district. Mike Thorstenson, if you want to join me, who is at Three Rivers Community Action. And if you'll just introduce yourselves when you...
Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Thorstenson. Did you want us both to introduce ourselves now?
Well, I think usually the way we do testimonies, if we'll do one at a time, would probably work better.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chairperson Slawick and committee members, my name is Mike Thorstenson. I'm the Executive Director of Three Rivers Community Action. It's a community action agency in Goodhue, Rice, and Wabasha counties in communities such as Northfield, Faribault, Red Wing, Lake City, Wabasha, Plainview, Zumbrota, etc. is the area between the Twin Cities and Rochester. And thank you for inviting me today, Representative Bly. I have a handout which just has an impact of the Head Start cuts within Three Rivers Community Action in 2003. Was that passed around to committee members? Okay. The first item is the Birth to Three grant. That was unallotted in 2003, and we lost $60,025 annually. We had this program for several years, and it was excellent in terms of providing early intervention. In other words, we had good prenatal care. You talked about what you needed to do to take care of yourself nutritionally and as a parent and so forth. So we lost 9 families with children birth to 3 overnight. We also lost our co-location with the Early Childhood Family Education in Faribault, Minnesota. Minnesota Head Start grants for Head Start, we received a 10% cut there, resulting in $26,002 being cut, and that was 8 families that lost Head Start services. Minnesota Head Start Innovative was a component of Head Start funding in previous years. That was unallotted. We lost $57,327 on that grant. And this was a demonstration project. 20 families lost community home ownership, education, and credit counseling services. And then it also focused on home ownership for Head Start families. And Head Start family incomes are at 100% of poverty. And I wanted to point that out. So, like, for a family of 4, that's $20,000 for the year 2006. It just went up in February 1st of this year to $20,650. So one of the goals of this project was to help target families for homeownership as well as stabilizing their housing in terms of rental housing and other housing services. Stable housing, as many of you are well aware of, contributes as much to school readiness and academic success as good teachers. The Wilder study, the Metro Mobility study, and many other studies have demonstrated that fact, that, you know, by helping to stabilize at-risk families so children aren't changing schools two or three times during the course of the year, that helps to contribute to their academic success. In addition, I just included the Community Action Grant, which we also received a 51% cut, which was $84,915 here. I mention that because those dollars are also used to help Head Start and Head Start eligible families out of poverty. For example, that helped, we impacted 30 to 40 households who lost economic bridging, and the economic bridging dollars are private dollars. Those were Foundation, United Way, and other dollars within the region that are used to help families get out of poverty. Second, it cut back our capacity to respond to community needs for affordable workforce housing development. And it also impacted the competitive continuum of care process in southeastern and south central Minnesota, which now requires that application fees be charged to applicants for those kinds of housing services dollars, which are put out on a competitive basis. So, in combination, we had five FTEs, five full-time positions were cut. Two family advocates, which help link families to services, everything from fuel assistance to housing assistance to health care to you name it, and also one teacher for our Red Wing program, the one birth to three teacher, and one housing specialist. So $143,354 were cut in 2003 out of Head Start funds for Three Rivers. And there was another $84,915 cuts in a community action grant for a total of $228,269 in cuts. And this is just meant to give you a picture of one three-county agency in southeastern Minnesota. The statewide impact was obviously many times larger. The percentage of Head Start dollars that we get is 1.36% of whatever the statewide appropriation is. And aside from the cuts in the financial aspect of the program, this doesn't say anything about the impact emotionally on teachers or on communities, on morale, on support for other community services, and it takes time to recover from those types of cuts. In addition, it also reduced our capacity to respond to emerging community challenges. So I would urge your support of House File 5 and its funding increases for ECFE, school readiness, and Head Start. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Members, what we're going to do is hear testimony on this bill, and then we can take questions for about 10 minutes. So if you'd like to think of some questions. Personally, although I've not met you and we've talked about your program several times, I find this pretty disturbing in terms of the magnitude of the cuts and what it's done to families. So I think, members, as we think about this and look at restoring the cuts, that you're making a good case for in my opinion, of why we need to restore the funding. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Duba. I am the Early Childhood Screening and School Readiness Coordinator for the Northfield Public Schools. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. In order to give context to my testimony, I want to give you a little background of what the intent and components of the school readiness program are. The school readiness program is intended to provide those programming services or access to programming services that will enable children to enter kindergarten ready to learn, prepare them for full participation in school. It is intended for children ages 3 to kindergarten entrance and their families, which is a very important component because school readiness is heavily dependent on how well that family is ready to support their child's education and their entrance into kindergarten. The components of a school readiness program are that it is collaborates with existing services that are available to families with young children. It provides appropriate, developmentally appropriate learning experiences, and for this we use the early childhood indicators of progress. It includes health referral, nutrition component, again, a parent component. Our parent involvement can take many forms, attendance at a preschool screening, early childhood screening, attendance at conferences, home visits, and parent advisory councils. School readiness programs also have cooperative efforts with family literacy and adult basic ed, community outreach, and community-based staff. Families that are participating in school readiness are assessed for risk factors that we know have an impact on a child's readiness for school and their ability to enter school ready to learn. And those risk factors include financial risk factors, the stability of the home, if they have moved often, if there are chemical dependency issues in the home, family members who are dealing with chronic illness, divorce, instability in any fashion in the family structure. Transportation barriers are a risk factor. Home language, if English is not their primary language. The education level of the parents. It's also something that is heavily influences the child's school readiness. Referral for assessment to early childhood special ed. These are children that are referred through screening to special ed for assessment and don't qualify for services. So they indicate some degree of risk factors, but yet don't qualify for receiving services, and so we don't want to lose track of those children. And also referral from other agencies. We receive referrals from public health, from ECSC, and from the Interagency Early Identification Committees. School readiness programs can be interpreted differently in each district. You can have half-day programs, half-day preschool programs. You can access ECFE programming. It can be home visits that include activities with children and parents. We can contract with existing services. Northfield has interpreted the school readiness program outcomes and intent as an integrated preschool, early childhood special ed, school readiness, and tuition-paying students. We we use our school readiness aid to provide scholarship and tuition assistance to those families who are assessed for risk and whose children show the greatest risk for not being ready for school entrance. These children are identified through early childhood screening. Each family that participates in school readiness has to be screened for these risk factors for early childhood screening. We partner with ECFE, with family literacy, with early childhood special ed, with the Early Childhood Initiative Coalition, and with Head Start. The range of income of the families that we serve for 2005-2006 was less than $10,000 annually, $275,000 or more. We serve families where the highest education level for the parent is some high school or GED up to graduate school. We serve children that speak Spanish. We have children that speak Bangla. We have children that speak Chinese. We have children that speak Russian. Our evidence at this point is largely anecdotal, and we are in the process of quantifying this. But we have heard very positive reports in the 4 years that we have used the integrated preschool that these children are in the classroom, in the kindergarten, and they are showing remarkable progress, and they have benefited from our school readiness program and their participation in our activities. We adopted this current model after we experienced cuts. Prior to this model that we are using, we had a school readiness standalone program that had a very robust parent education component. We had a parent educator and outreach coordinator who went out and found these families. It takes a considerable amount of time to get to find all the families to come in for screening and get them identified and assessed for risk. And after we experienced cuts, that program floundered a little bit through ECFE, and we addressed it as well as we could through ECFE programming, and then revisioned it in collaboration with ECFE and tuition-paying families so that we could provide programming where none was existing in Northfield at that time. We, right now, still, our needs are always exceeding our resources. And in particular, we are finding that though we have been diligent in accessing grant money and adopting a sliding fee scale so that we can maximize the distribution of our school readiness resources, we are still having to make those terribly difficult choices about who is at most risk and who can benefit and who can't benefit. We could fill every slot with children for whom English is not their primary language. Those children benefit greatly from these early childhood experiences. They may be competent in their primary language, and all they need is opportunities to be in a structured program where they can practice language skills. However, as I mentioned before, many of these children are identified through early childhood screening. They are assessed for risk factors. They may, in fact, be referred for assessment to special education, don't qualify for services, and therefore are somewhat sort of hanging at that subclinical level. These are kids who are not going to pop, maybe in third grade when it's a lot more expensive, but we don't want to lose track of them, so we really, really need a spot for them where we can put them and say, this is a service that would benefit you. This is where we can monitor your progress and assist you in readiness for school. It is where they get the most bang for the buck. You get your children in there and serviced and ready for school. But we make those choices because we can't put everybody in the program. And we assist as well as we can. But if we had more money, if this were a perfect world and we can do what we want, we would increase the intensity and the duration of services because evidence and research has shown that those are salient factors in the success of a school readiness program and getting children ready for school is increased intensity and increased duration of the programming. We could increase our outreach efforts. We are always trying to find those children and bring those families in that would benefit from our services. They don't always walk in. They don't always drive and they have transportation issues. They need to be reached out to and found. We could also really expand that important parent education piece, providing support for the families. This is what a ready child looks like. This is how you advocate for your child in the public school. This is what you do with your child at home to increase school readiness. If we had opportunities to increase our school-home connections, that would aid greatly in our children's ability to be ready for school. And as you know, and I'm sure you've heard from others, children who have benefits and who receive early intervention, we can really leverage the benefits of early intervention if we're able to reach them when they are young. I thank you for the opportunity to be here to testify. And for more information, I refer you to the Governor's 2006 Summit on School Readiness and the Early Childhood Indicators of Progress. And I just would like to say you cannot overestimate the influence and the importance of effective early childhood intervention and school readiness. When all of our youngest citizens benefit, we all benefit.
Thank you. We'll have about 10 minutes for questions. We do have a couple members with questions. We'll start with Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my first question is for House staff. Last night, when I was reading the bills, I didn't see a fiscal note on this on the Internet. You know, and now I see that there's one in the folder, and it looks like it's signed January 29th. Do we know... I'm not good with computers, so maybe I just did it wrong or something, but
No, you were right. Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, this is, there was a Senate companion bill, and so this is the fiscal note. It's the same impact as you would have on the Senate companion bill, so you probably wouldn't have found it unless you were looking specifically for a Senate fiscal note.
Okay.
But this is the actual, I mean, if they... Occasionally, if we request a fiscal note, they would say, well, they would refer us to the Senate fiscal note. Oh. And that's why we deliver this.
I guess I don't...
Representative Garofalo?
Yeah, Madam Chair, we should just... If there's some sort of way we could... Maybe I'll just start looking for the Senate files when I'm out there. That'd be easier, but... okay. Because, again, when I saw this today, I saw it was done January 29th, so... A question for Representative Bly, and this just kind of caught my eye on the back page of the bill. Clauses 1 and 2, we're adding the word entitlement. And I'm wondering if you could just, am I looking a little bit too deep into that or not, or what's the purpose of that?
Representative Bly?
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask Danielle Lemeyer to speak to that.
Ms. Lemeyer, and while she's looking at the language, I do want to say we could look at Representative Garofalo maybe getting a link or something that tells us to look to the Senate page. I was not familiar that that's the process either. I mean, it would be kind of confusing because it's not clear which bills are going to be have a fiscal note through the Senate and not.
As the chair knows, I'm new here, so I still read the bills.
Representative Garofalo, we're glad you read them. I just thought you'd have a high-tech solution to this problem, maybe.
Unfortunately, I'm just here to point out problems, not offer solutions, Madam Chair. So.
Thank you. Thanks for the input.
That's going to show up in a lit piece somewhere, isn't it?
No comment. Ms. Lemeyer?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, as far as your question about adding the word entitlement goes, I'm not sure exactly what the practical effect of that is. Maybe somebody from the department can answer that, but I think it could mean that the program would be an entitlement to anybody who would be eligible, and so they'd be entitled to get services, but I'm not sure if the department would interpret it the same way.
Madam Chair, if we could maybe, if someone from the department might be interested in talking about that for a minute.
Yes, I see the one of the departments, the Department of Ed is here. I'll have them come down. And address that. It actually is in a couple of places, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Michelle Weber with the Minnesota Department of Education. And if you could please repeat the question.
Sure.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and the testifier, on page 2 of House File 5, I guess the only changes in those clauses, we're seeing that after the words total school readiness aid, we're adding the word entitlement, and we're doing it in clauses 1 and 2. And I guess when I was reading this, my first thought was this would turn this into a forecasted appropriation, and I guess I want to, maybe I'm just reading into this too much, but first of all, I guess before I ask Representative Bly my question, I should ask, is that correct? Would the effect of this be to turn this into a forecasted appropriation?
Madam Chair, Representative, the word entitlement does not turn it into a forecasted program. What it means is that any school in the state would be entitled to apply for funding. So an aid and the word entitlement doesn't necessarily add a big impact to the bill, so I'm not sure of the reasoning behind adding that in the amendment.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
And to the testifier, am I correct in understanding then that under current law, all schools cannot apply for this?
All schools are eligible to apply. Certain schools do not choose to.
Okay, so.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and to the testifier, so all schools right now currently have the ability to apply for this, and by adding the words entitlement, we would then give the schools the ability to apply for this.
Ms. Harper.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, I'm not sure that entitlement gets you any additional authority in the bill or in the current school readiness language.
And
Representative Garofalo.
Well, thank you to the testifier. Representative Bly, do you know, I guess maybe if we could, Ms. Lemire, did you draft this bill, or I'm just, no? Okay. Representative Bly, do we know who drafted this bill?
Representative Bly?
I'm not sure exactly, but I can find that out and carry your question to them if you'd like.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo, the bills today are being rolled over for inclusion,
sure.
Possible inclusion of the omnibus bill, so we can take a look at that language and discover why that happened. This is House File 5 is by being of the number 5 and in the top bills for this session is a priority for the House caucus, and so that's where some of the language changes came from.
And Madam Chair, my only comment would be that it seems like a extraneous and superfluous language that frightens me. So if it doesn't do anything and it frightens members, we might might want to take a look at removing it. So,
so noted.
Representative
Bly.
I just respond that one of my constituents asked me the very same question, and I was curious and trying to find an answer before we came here, and I wasn't able to. So I'll continue to search for it, and I'm sensitive to what you're asking.
Okay. Sounds like a smart constituent, and he agrees with me. He or she agrees with me.
Well, I'm not certain that they agree, but they asked the same question.
Okay. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe one solution or reason for the entitlement is without the word there, maybe they don't ask for the funds, and when they see the word entitlement, say, oh, I'm entitled to that? I think I'll ask for something. But I was looking on the last page of the backside, and underneath Subdivision 2 Head Start in lines 219 and 220, it says it's $20,100,000. And I was looking at the fiscal note here, and under the Head Start, under the House file, it says, well, that's the forecast. I saw the 19-1, and then under the Senate file is 21. I was just wondering why it's, but maybe I just answered my own question. You just want to make sure that you got it covered in case the Senate file goes forward. I was looking at bartering between the House and the Senate, you know, between 19 and 20.
I think Representative Bly has a comment. Representative Bly?
Actually, not to that, but the department person, I think, might have a better understanding of the previous question that Representative Garofalo asked, if she could just speak to that right now.
Okay. Representative Bly, let's just make sure. Representative Wardlow, are you complete?
I'm happy.
Okay. Thank you. Glad to have our committee members happy. This is one of our most interesting flowing meetings. Representative Bly, if Ms. Weber would like to testify from the department, and again, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Michelle Weber, and luckily someone from the Department of Finance was here, so they were able to catch me when I walked away from the testifying table here. The aid has to do with the appropriation, which is made for the school readiness program. The entitlement has to do with school readiness. We have a 90-10 split in terms of when we pay it out. So we pay out 90% of it in the first year, 10% in the second year, and that's what the entitlement language is referring to. So the entitlement is the amount of funding that is available to them in that year.
Okay. So Madam Chair, to the testifier, this is just like a general education shift where it's 90-10, where the... Okay.
That is correct. Over. Yeah,
okay,
that
so
is correct.
I have a follow-up question, but I know we have some other bills, so...
Perfect. Okay. Thank you for passing. I think what we want to do is take one last question on this bill, and then we will move on to the next bill. And Representative Gottwald?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was pleased to note, at least in some of the materials that I've read on this, that these programs do involve parental engagement, not just teaching parents to be parents, which I sometimes wonder whether government really knows how to parent, but parental engagement. And I was going to ask you to speak more to that, but I think I'll move on to other questions. One of them is, do we have... And this may be begging the question a bit, but do we have, what evidence is there that these programs have lasting impact? that in fact, kids who go through these preschool programs derive a benefit that lasts into K through 12 education, and for how long? Because I think we do need to think in terms of, especially here in the financing area, about where we spend limited resources and what bang for the buck we are getting. I think there's a lot of people who believe that early childhood prep in a formal setting is good and a good use of money, but is there evidence to back that up? And if so, could you speak a little bit to that?
Who would like to take that, Representative Blind?
I'll say a few words and then I'll turn it over to the testifiers. But, you know, I think sometimes we think about this in terms of a one-time fix. You know, you put in the remedy and it's fixed, and therefore it shouldn't be a problem later on. But in many cases, the families that are involved in these programs have ongoing problems throughout the child's life. And although we may see some improvement at first, we can't guarantee necessarily that the family will remain intact or that the family will be able to provide the supports. I think if you think about it in terms of a family that really struggles economically, they cannot provide the same kind of enrichment or the same kinds of things that a more economically happy family can do to provide to their children. So with that said, I'll just let the testifiers respond.
Mr. Thorgensen?
Representative Gottwelt, is that correct?
Okay.
Madam Chair, Head Start, for example, we do a lot of early intervention with dental, to give you one example. In fact, a week ago, we had a child who had exposed nerves all the way around the bottom of their mouth. This is a 3.5-year-old child who didn't realize what kind of pain that was until we got them to the dentist. We got them into the dentist. They were able to take care of that bottom mouth situation early on. I spent 14 years on the school board in Northfield. We often dealt with speech impediments, speech therapy, and other kinds of problems that emerged because children's teeth hadn't developed or they developed self-esteem issues because they couldn't smile but never got their permanent teeth. So every child within Head Start is required to have a dental exam. Those early interventions might cost you, you know, $100, $200 for some fluoride, and in some cases $2,000 as opposed to $40,000 down the road for speech therapy. The second thing, San Bernardino County did a study on 600 Head Start families recently that showed a $9 to $1 return on the investment. The RAND Corporation has studies out which show a decrease in kids who are involved with criminal activities down the road who've had the Head Start experience, increase in health awareness, long-term academic success, more kids go on to get their high school diploma, more kids go on to post-secondary kinds of schooling. So there's a number of data sources out there that give some long-term studies. And one last thing, I know the St. Paul Foundation is doing some research on the impacts third grade with the Scott Carver Dakota Head Start program and with the Ramsey Action Program. And I believe they're going to be releasing some data on that sometime by the end, right around the 1st of March. So there's a number of things going on, not only across the country, but in Minnesota. Did that help to answer your question?
Madam Chair.
Representative Galtwine.
To a certain extent. I think one of the questions we're looking at is as we look at school readiness, ECFE, the other programs under this bill, the question sometimes comes to mind, do we have evidence that kids on these programs perform better than kids who maybe aren't as a whole? And you're suggesting to me there are studies showing that is the case. So it does get at that. One other question, if I could, Madam Chair. I see us bringing forward a number of funding bills, and I'm wondering, are we going to set a target at some point, or are we going to simply move these bills and not know how much money we're going to end up spending, if you will?
Representative Thoughtwell, that's a good question. What happens here is Representative Eastland, who had a meeting in his district, couldn't be here right now. He's a Republican lead. He and I will be meeting with Representative Solberg, who's the head of Ways and Means, and talking about the governor's bill and kind of where we see ourselves in relation to that. The next thing that will happen is there will be the February forecast, which will be coming out February 28th. After that, we will be looking at setting targets. I don't have the exact date on that. We have set our first policy deadline, you probably saw that, which is March 23rd, and then we have also set the deadline for this committee of April 2nd. So by April 2nd, we will not only we will have a bill that complies to the target. So we will get a target before that, and then we'll be working towards making these requests and any others that we see in the next several weeks fit into that. So right now, we're just getting a feel for where we're going, seeing that the forecast comes out, and then we will be setting targets, yes. Representative Gottwald?
Madam Chair, my concern here is obvious. If we set a target of this amount and we've already spent, approved bills that spend most of it, mm-hmm. are we limiting our options, if you will, for addressing a whole host of needs?
Well, Representative Gottwald, what we do in at the Finance Committee is why we lay bills on the table. It's kind of a smorgasbord or a deli. So we're laying all the bills on the table, and then we'll have the dollar amount, and we can pick and choose from those bills. So when we lay this bill on the table today, we're not necessarily endorsing neither the ideas nor the amounts. However, it does put them up on the table so that they can be there along with any of the bills that we take up. And then we will have to I would say in most cases, downsize to fit what the targets might be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. I know that Representative Nornes had a quick question. Can you fit
just
in a quick one?
Comment, actually.
Representative Nornes?
Madam Chair. And it's not a criticism exactly, but I noticed there are 34 DFL authors on this bill, and only 34 DFL authors. So I'm just hoping that we can become a little more bipartisan as we go along, because it kind of sends, I think, the wrong message that the rest of us don't care. So I think we do. So okay. That's all it's, for what it's worth, just those comments.
Well, if you'd like to, Representative Dornis, that's a fair comment, and if you'd like to add your name, I'm sure we would welcome you, as long as, and your colleagues too. So, with that, we're going to move, Representative Bly.
Madam Chair and Representative Dornis, actually, with this particular bill, it was so popular that before I had a chance to even carry it to other people, it was filled up. And actually, Representative Kranz's bill is a bill that's very similar to this, a clone bill, and hopefully Republicans signed on to that one. I'm sorry there wasn't room for Republican
Madam Chair, I wasn't doing, I wasn't bringing it up to be critical. I just wanted to make that point. So.
Thank you. Well, that will move on to the next bill. We will roll your bill, House File 5, Representative Bly, into inclusion, possible inclusion, for the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kranz. House File 139. Members, I wanted to acknowledge the, do you see the cookies at your places? I wanted to acknowledge that Tricia Kiefer made those and for Valentine's, so you can choose whether to eat them yourselves or share them with your Valentines or your families, but thank you for doing that. They look very good, so thank you. Yes. Along with the job well done. With that, we will move on to the next bill. This is a very similar bill. In this part, we're focusing on the other different part of the bill. Representative Kranz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is actually kind of a unique opportunity in that not only is it similar, it is the same bill.
Representative Kranz, I need you to move the bill.
Sorry. I make a motion to move House File 139 and hold it over for inclusion into the Omnibus Bill.
Okay, so your Representative Kranz has moved to have House File 139 held over for inclusion into the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it is basically the clone bill, and to provide an opportunity for other members to sign on in support of this measure. And I would welcome Representative Nornes, where did you go? I'd recommend and honor all requests if you're interested in signing on to this legislation. I did have the opportunity to address one particular part of it in the ECFE area. I had with me Karen Schaub, who is the Director of Community Services for the Spring Lake Park School District, which is actually the school district that I teach in. And she will speak to the kind of the overall programs of ECFE and impacts that they've seen recently and a future, hopefully, a bright one.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Yes. Karen Schaub, Director of Community Services in Spring Lake Park School District. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak in front of you today. We are pleased to see House File 139 in my district, Spring Lake Park. We're a small district in some ways, but we're also still growing. Over the past years, we have had opportunities where we've had to make some choices. We've had to give up transportation. We've had to cut back on home visits, family literacy. We've struggled to get interpreters when we've needed interpreters in our programs. So we've had to make some choices that we would care not to make. On the other hand, we've also been working very hard to move forward what we're trying to accomplish in early childhood family ed and our other programs. We're really looking at providing a variety. We're looking at choices. We are also looking at ways to continue our full inclusion with all of our children in our district. Any of our special needs children are part of all of our classes. They spend the majority of their day with us. We want to continue to grow that area. We also have been really involved in continuous improvement process in our district. All of our teachers have been working in small learning communities. We've been working on developing the curriculum and assessment for our program. And through this, we've been able now to add a pre-K reading curriculum that matches our K-3 reading curriculum. So we're really working very hard to tie what we're doing in our program to the K-12 program so that these students are ready to learn. We have targets for our parents. Our parent educators, we ask them to look at some key questions in their development. What is it that we want parents to learn, and how do we know that they've learned it? We're working on trying to do as much evaluation as we can, but the money has not been there to do any long-term evaluations so far that we've been able to free up. So we're asking for you to support House File 139 so that we can continue these efforts, because it takes time for our staff to be able to get together to do this learning, to really make the difference. So when these kids appear in kindergarten, they are ready to learn, and we've hopefully caught some issues ahead of time to make them more successful.
Thank you. We will ask for a couple questions. I think we have one more testifier, Representative Kranz. If you would like to come forward and identify yourself for the tape. Members, we're running a little bit behind, so if you have maybe just one question after this, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Carla Hensley. I am from West St. Paul. I'm in the district, school district 197. This is my daughter, Lydia. She's in kindergarten.
Welcome to the committee, Lydia.
I am an attorney by trade, but I am speaking to you today as a parent, as a concerned citizen, and I'm speaking on behalf of others who are like-minded. And most importantly, I'm speaking to you on behalf of children who have no voices of their own on this issue. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm extremely troubled to learn that only approximately 1% of our state budget is allocated for early learning programs. That's less than 1% for the children of our state. Is it any wonder that only about half of our kids enter kindergarten fully prepared to learn? We can do better than this, and we must do better. One important way we can do better is to restore funding to the ECFE Head Start and School Readiness programs. I'm here today to speak directly to you about ECFE. ECFE is what its title says it is, Early Childhood Family Education. The program helps parents help their kids learn and grow. ECFE, let me remind you, grew out of the efforts of some visionary legislators in the mid-1970s. The fact that the program is still going strong today, some 30 years later, speaks to the positive impact it has had on thousands and thousands of Minnesota families. ECFE is a simple concept, but a vital one. It's a program grounded in common sense. There is no job more important than parenting, yet parents are provided with no training to do their job well. Research confirms that a child's first years of life are vitally important in terms of his or her development, especially in the areas of language, social skills, and root intelligence. Research also shows that early childhood programs involving parents and children are more effective than programs that focus exclusively on children. Parental involvement prior to kindergarten encourages parents to play an active role in their children's learning throughout their education. Children whose parents are involved in their education have been shown to be more successful in school. Let me repeat that. Children whose parents are involved in their education have been shown to be more successful in school. This is where ECFE comes in. A typical ECFE class, and mine met once a week, has a parent-child activity time where families explore the classroom that's full of developmentally appropriate learning activities planned by a trained early childhood teacher. My kids particularly love the water table and the sand table, as well as group singing and using one of those big parachute things. My kids still love reading Go Away, Big Green Monster by Ed Emberle, which was brought to life by a particularly good and beloved ECFE teacher of ours named Karen King. And there's a transition time where kids and parents separate, and young, very young kids and don't separate from their parents, but in the majority of cases there's a separation. And then there's the parent discussion time, and at the same time the children's activity time is going on. And during that time, parents meet with a parent educator to share experiences and support and to learn the latest developments in child development and parenting techniques. Parents help one another. And like I said, while the parents are meeting, the kids are playing, interacting together, and learning those socialization skills like sharing, learning to wait in line, resolving conflicts. Some of us still have trouble with that. so vital to success in kindergarten. And what's great is the kids are treated as individuals, and their different approaches to learning are honored by the teacher. One other vital component of ECFE I wanted to briefly mention is home visits. I didn't personally benefit from this, but a lot of ECFE programs provide home visits to families who are isolated by various circumstances, not the least of which is a lack of transportation. I did attend ECFE with both of my children. I have a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old. Lydia's in kindergarten. My son will be entering kindergarten next year. And, you know, we all benefited. As a result, I'm a better parent today. And most importantly, my daughter entered kindergarten this past fall fully ready and eager to learn. She's an example. She is a success story. I wanted to mention briefly, too, my son had a hearing problem when he was really young, before he turned 3, brought about by repeat ear infections and very large tonsils. And his hearing issue was discovered early, and that's fortunate because his speech development was affected, and we were able to get him the attention he needed to fix the problem early on. And I know that my husband and I, who are pretty conscientious parents, if I might say, would not have acted on this issue as early as we did absent the observations and advice of Lars's, my son, ECFE teacher. An added bonus is that my school, or the school my daughter attends, is the same school where we had ECFE, and sometimes she'll say, "Mom, see, there's our classroom where we had ECFE." It's a, you know, an added bonus for us is that she was familiar with her school before she even started. My family represents one of the many successful and positive experiences with an early learning program. Head Start and school readiness programs are equally vital for children and parents. I was here a week ago today and heard testimony from others who have benefited from all three of these programs. I don't have a particularly compelling story to tell you, like many of those I heard last week, but ECFE was very important to me and my family. I feel fortunate that the program was available, and I feel very strongly about the benefits of these programs. For you as legislators, children entering kindergarten fully prepared to learn means less remedial education and grade retention, improvement with respect to student achievement in the short run, and in the long run, and this means patience and looking at the big picture, producing a better, more educated, skilled, and competitive workforce. This is a long-term investment, but one with the highest rate of return imaginable. It is crucial that we pay attention and do right by our children from the get-go. The evidence is in, and it is clear and convincing. These programs help families help themselves. Strong families mean a stronger society. We all benefit. Dollars spent on early learning programs are more than repaid by savings in remedial health, education, and welfare costs later. There is momentum growing on the issue of early childhood education, as is evidenced by the existence of this committee. Parents want these programs for themselves and for their children. Children can't vote, but parents can, and let me tell you, we do. We will be watching our representatives and monitoring how they vote on these issues. I encourage you to talk with your peers in the House and Senate, educate them about early learning programs, including ECFE, Head Start, and school readiness, and urge them to vote to restore funding for these programs to the pre-2003 levels. The question is not whether we can afford to invest in early childhood education programs. The question is whether we can afford not to. invest in our kids and in our families. I implore you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, we are tight on time, so I just want to ask a brief question to Lydia, if she'll respond. I just wanted to know, what was your favorite part of ECFE?
My favorite part is when I was playing in the gym.
playing in the gym. Good. Thank you, and thank you for being here. Representative Kranz, we will have your bill included for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you. Next, we will have Representative Fritz, House File 178. And then after that, we'll have House File 327, Representative Portman. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you. I am Representative Patty Fritz, and I'm from Faribault, Minnesota, and I'm honored today to have with me two of my dear friends from the Faribault area, Judy Colbert, who is the director of the Early Childhood Facility in Faribault, and a parent that will speak and testify to the bill. But first, I'd like to move the bill, Madam Chair, House File 178, to be included in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Fritz moves to have House File 178 for possible inclusion in the omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill.
Thank you. And I just want to mention a couple of things that the bill will do. It will restore the early childhood funding formula from $112 per eligible child to $120. In 2001, funding was at its all-time high of $120 per resident, age 0 to 4, and in 2003, it was cut by 20%. In 2005, the legislature restored funding to the current $112 per child. These cuts, along with inflationary factors, have left communities with unmet early education needs. Number two, it would increase the ECFE base funding from a minimum population of 150 children to a minimum population of 180. This minimum population level has never been adjusted since the levy began in 1987. Number three, it would increase the home visiting levy from $1.60 per child, eligible child, to $2 per eligible child. In 1993, the legislator appropriated $1.60 per child, and the 14-year-old funding level falls short of meeting the growing needs for home visits. And with that, I'd like to ask my testifiers, Ms. Colbert and Ms. Lockerbie, is a parent. Ms. Lockerbie is a parent at the Early Childhood Facility, and I'd like you to hear what they have to say.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Yes. I'm Judy Colbert, and I coordinate all the early childhood programs for the Faribault Public Schools, and that includes ECFE, school readiness. We have a community-based preschool and also our early childhood special education program. So in our district, we have a birth-to-four count of 1,808 children, 0 to 5 years old, and we serve about 200 children in our ECFE program, and that's about 11% of the total population. The last 4 years have been difficult. About one-fifth of our funding was cut, as Patty has just mentioned, and we have left children and families behind during that time. Today we are serving about 50 fewer families than we did 4 years ago. We've raised fees to families, and we've cut staff. We also have lost the ability to work with other programs like Head Start, as Mr. Thorstenson mentioned earlier in their Birth to Three program, and other key functions, especially reaching out to families that don't have the means to come to us. We are survivors, however, and we do know that the research and the reasons why pre-kindergarten parenting programs are vital and work. And while it's very difficult to provide the research that shows what would happen without the programming, we do know that we see parents that have been involved with their children at a preschool level also serving in many capacities in our school systems as their children progress through the K-12 system. And we know that without our efforts, some of those parents would not see the need and be as attentive to their children and their education as they are with our programming. We certainly have appreciated the efforts of all of you as committee members to look at restoring our funding over the past couple of years and the increase that was given last year. However, we do really appreciate the effort now, and I'm extremely thrilled to see the number of different bills and to hear about the support from all of you on this process. Early childhood family education works. It's a wonderful program that it has lasted the test of time. And we certainly see around the country that programs look to, or that states look to our programming here in Minnesota as a model. However, we're starting to fall behind there too, as other states are now mandating preschool programming for all children. And we are still only serving a small portion of all of the people out there. The home visit levy is also an important piece of what we do. However, again, the amount of money there, if you look at our 1,808 child base that we have in Faribault, and Faribault is a community of about 24,000 people, even at $2, we're talking $3,600 in that home visit levy. And what we've used it in our community for is basically outreach to some of our non-English speaking families to provide information to them in their home language and to help them to understand what programming we have available to them in our centers. Also, some individual families who, for one reason or another, find it difficult to come to a traditional class with other families. And so it's very limited in what we're able to do, but we do appreciate the effort to increase that programming as well and look at other agencies like public health and social services, Head Start also, to provide some of those home visit type models. And we certainly work with those programs whenever we can to provide the maximum service to the families in our communities. Now I'd like to introduce Sarah Blackerby. She's one of our fine families that participates in our ECFB program in Faribault.
Thank you. Liz Colbert, I also just want to thank you. I know that you hosted the Early Childhood Caucus. We had a forum down in Faribault, I think it was a year ago maybe, and had a huge turnout and many interested folks, and we appreciate you hosting that. Of course, that's our bipartisan, bicameral group of legislators interested in early childhood. So thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
My name is Sarah Lockerby. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for listening to me for these few moments. I just want to give you a little background on myself. I am a full-time mother, which is a 24/7 job, and it can be very difficult many days. My 2.5-year-old son is very active, and living out in rural Rice County, we are kind of isolated at times. So I did ECFE for both of us to begin our socialization so that we can find other families and friends so that we have outlets. And another more important part is just to have him be more socialized with other children so that I can watch his development and make sure that myself and my husband as parents are doing the job that we should be doing so that he will become a human being that I will be proud of, like any other parent. And I just want to thank everybody. I'm just very nervous. It's not one of the things I do very well. Speaking.
You're doing fine.
I really am passionate about seeing education in these early years. I do my early childhood in Faribault, and I also have signed up this last session. We are also going to another school district just because I see the importance and the different socialization that he needs, that I figured he needed more. and, you know, and without funding, we just weren't getting enough in Faribault, so I needed to go to another district. I live between the two districts. For myself, it works great. But I know there are other families out there who don't have it, so we need, you know, getting more money for home visits would be another way to be contacting these children. And parents, giving them the help and resources that they also need to become better parents, because children don't come out with handbooks. And I also, when I was at my one ECFB class in Kenyon today, I just asked the other parents, I said, why was this important to you and for me and for herself, as she moved into a new community, had not known anybody, had these young children, and that's where now she has met other families, they have become friends, they are her network for when she needs help, and also the educators are there for other help and so I want to thank you all again for listening, and
thanks. Well, thank you. Thank you for talking about ECFE. It is an ECFE Day members, and we'll have focus on different issues at different times. Are there any quick questions? Otherwise, we have one more bill and then another testifier after that. I'm also an ECFE and ECSV parent, so I appreciate you being here and you providing your comments about the program. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope this isn't as stupid a question as the last one I asked.
Representative Wardlow?
Yeah, that's me, isn't it? I guess. Could you talk a little bit more about the home visits? I mean, who goes, and do the parents ask for the visit, or how does that work?
We have licensed parent educators who work in all of our ECFE programming. The model that was mentioned, I think, by one of the other testifiers, where we have classes that meet once a week. The parents spend part of their time doing activities that are set up by a licensed early childhood teacher that are developmentally appropriate for the ages of the children. And then about halfway through the class session, which typically lasts from 1.5 to 2 hours, the parents will separate from their children, and the parent educators then are trained to talk about the various types of parenting, talk about development and health and discipline and toilet training and all of the very important vital pieces of parenting preschool-aged children. These same parent educators then are also trained to go into the home. And what we do in our district, and I think the model varies from district to district, we will take referrals for home visiting. We have developed a partnership with public health and actually receive referrals from public health on families with young children. And in Faribault, we happen to have a large population of Hispanic families. And so right now we've been earmarking that money to go to that portion of the program where our parent educator goes out with a Spanish interpreter from public health. And the two of them then work with families with newborns that are Spanish speaking. And then they bring them to our center once a week if they're interested in that for a parent-child class then that lasts through the first year of life for those children. There's other models. We have teen parents also that we've done some home visiting with, or in certain situations where there's families that a group setting just isn't what they're interested in. For whatever reason, they're not comfortable in a group setting or have issues that go beyond the realm of what people want to talk about in a group, that have some more serious needs, then our home visitors will go and do that. Work specifically one-on-one with the family.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up. So when they come out to the home, or they go out to the home, do they ask permission first, or do they just show up at the door, or how's that?
Ms. Colbert.
Absolutely, with that appointment.
Thank you. Excellent question, Representative Wardlow. So, thank you. With that, House File 178 will be rolled over for inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, while we're switching bills here, can I just
let me call up Representative Portman. If you can come up with your testifiers. Representative Grafflo.
Madam Chair, just a question for House Research. If just two quick questions, if maybe they could share this with the committee. Not right now, but maybe an email update. Sorry. The number of children under the age of five residing in the district, if we could find out where that data is determined from, how that data is collected, whether it's the source for that. And then secondly, with a historical context of why we use October 1st of the previous school year in calculating the number of five-year-olds. Again, it's probably I don't expect you to have that at the tip of your tongue, but if we could have an email with that, that'd be great.
Ms. Lyons?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo will get that for the committee.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo, did you want that on a district-by-district? You want the five-year-olds?
No. Madam Chair, I was just in the way that ECFB funding is determined is by calculating the number of five-year-olds. And sometimes if we use U.S. Census data versus Met Council population estimates outside the Met Council, I just thought it'd be an important number. A lot of times how these numbers are determined is more important than how the law is drafted. So just, and that was, again, a historical context. It would seem that using October 1st from a previous school year would be unfair for those growing districts, not that I have any personal interest in that matter at all. Just a historical context explaining why.
Representative Grafflo, you're not such a newcomer around here. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, Representative Portman. If we need to have your bill moved. And Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, I move House File 327 for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Representative Murphy moves House File 327 for possible inclusion in the omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Murphy. My name is Melissa Hartman, and I'm sorry to be in and out, but we're having quite some fun down in Transportation Finance. So I'm here today, very pleased to be authoring the school readiness bill. As many of you know, this program gets kids ready for learning in their later years and was cut some years back, and it's time to start moving in the direction of restoring this needed funding. I have with me today from Anoka Hennepin, Steve Kerr, and also a parent from the district to talk about the school readiness program in Anoka Hennepin. With that, Mr. Kerr.
Welcome to the committee, if you can state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Steve Kerr. I'm the Community Education Director for Anoka Hennepin, and also I wear the hat of the President of the Minnesota Community Education Association. Today, I think what I'd like to talk to you about a little bit is to zoom broadly, and had the opportunity to talk with you last Thursday a little bit, and I'll reference a little history. 91. The legislature initially approved this program. In 92, the funding at that point in time was $10.7 million. Today, it's about $9.2 million. In that time, originally in 92, the funding provided services for 67% of the school districts in the state, and today it provides funding for about 99% of the school districts. Obviously, during that time, from 92 till now, the state's population has grown, and thus the strain on these dollars, both from inflation, demand, the change in our population, from the demographics that we're seeing in some of our communities, and the economics in some of our communities, it's very difficult to deliver the intent of the program in the way that it was originally designed. In Anoka Hennepin, in our school readiness program, we serve 1,300 children currently, and we do that through a couple of models. We have a preschool model that is blended with this preschool model actually existed for us prior to the program inception in 91, the school readiness funding. And we blended that together. So from the state, for Anoka Hennepin, we have about 16,000 preschool children, just a little bit under that. We receive about $386,000 in state funding for that program. And in addition to that, for those families that can pay for the services, we charge fees. And so we have an additional $650,000 in fees that we generate for those families that can afford to pay for the service. I'm going to talk about a model that we have attempted to incorporate and our programs in our school district as well as around the state are a part of trying to close the achievement gap with children. And with lack of resources, obviously, that gets hard. But one of the things that we had attempted to do as a pilot was to create an ELL preschool program where the criteria for being involved with it meant that you either had to be a second language learner or in a high economic need category. So 100% of the children in that program that were enrolled in that program were in that category. That program required that we bus those children to a central site in order to deliver that program efficiently. The law allows us to piggyback, if you will, with existing transportation routes in the school district where that works without an additional charge to community education, which this is housed under, to the school readiness program. But when that bus transportation doesn't piggyback, when we need to return those children back to their homes, or we need to pick them up on the incoming route, that cost, that transportation cost, is there for us to deal with. So, for example, for this program in which we provided services for 32 children who are very high need, it cost us $60,000 for transportation for those kids. These are kids who can't, their families can't afford to pay us fees. So the common sense part says this makes sense to do this, this makes sense to deliver it in this fashion, and yet we don't really have the resources to continue to do this, and yet we should probably have five or six of these around the school district based on the demographics that I have in the school district and the profile that I have, that I can't do that without stopping services for the other families that we currently are serving. So this is the challenge that we face. Let me talk a little bit about results, because I think there was a couple of questions earlier to some of the earlier programs about results. Our staff does work with the children and the families. They do observations, developmental observations of the children, do work sampling throughout the process, and communicate that to parents as they go through the program. In this particular high need program, or the high target program that I referenced earlier, typically in our school district, children, when they enter kindergarten, go through a kind of a screening process when they're in kindergarten after a few weeks, that we help deliver, actually, through our parent involvement program, which children are screened, and to say where are they at in some of their skills. Now, if they fall below a certain level in that screening, then they're set, channeled off and identified for a kindergarten intervention program. In our school district, 21% of our incoming kindergartners are identified as being in that need some additional boost as they come into kindergarten. And I give you that number for a reference point that I'm going to talk to in relationship to our school readiness program. In our program of 32 children that I identified earlier, typically about 100% of the ELL kids coming in would be identified as being in this kindergarten intervention program later, in the kindergarten program, not from our program, but normally in the general population. Normally, 70 to 80% of the high economic need families with children will be identified as being in this kindergarten intervention program. We decided to do a follow-up with our children to say, what impact did we make? Granted, we don't have years and years under our belt to say, will these results hold forever? But I would say to you, simple math, 3 children out of 32 were identified as being in this, needing to be in this kindergarten intervention program. Those are results. Those are paybacks for the state of Minnesota, any way you cut it. That's positive impact. To have those children able to learn day one in school, so that they aren't falling behind their peers, it's a common sense solution. The problem I have, as I mentioned earlier, is we don't have the resources to continue to do this and continue to expand this, dealing with inflation-adjusted dollars that are about 50% of what from the program's inception in 92. That's just reality. I can't pull a rabbit out of the hat on that one. That's just reality. So we're asking you to provide us for some of those resources so that we can make some of the difference with these kids and these families that we know is possible. And there are districts around the area that have data. St. Paul's, Bloomington's have some models where they've been working on, where there's some data that exists to show that with proper interventions, there is some significant change in learning for these kids as they move through school. In fact, I believe in Bloomington's case, they've tracked some of these kids up into third grade. And so I think there is some data out there when we say, are these working? Yeah, there is some stuff out there that is working. I think with that, Tracy, I'd like to introduce Tracy Knight. And Tracy has a unique kind of perspective that she can provide you as a committee. Tracy has had children in our program in school readiness, but she also has taught part-time in our program over the years. So she can give you a couple different perspectives as committee members.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record, and we're running a little bit behind, so hopefully if you can limit it to a couple of minutes.
Sure.
Okay.
My name is Tracy Nelson, and I want to thank you for the chance to be here today. As you said, I took part in classes with my children, both early childhood family education classes and school readiness classes. And through those, I learned to be the best parent that I could be and to be an active part in my children's education. They're now beyond the school readiness program, but they take part in athletics and science fairs and spelling bees, and they volunteer in their community. And I really feel that they're still benefiting from the early childhood experiences that they had. And one of the important parts is that they really enjoy learning. And that carries on through elementary school, middle school, and high school with them. Not that I want to let you know how many years ago it was that I was in the school readiness program. And as he said, you know, I've gone on to become an early childhood educator, and I'm currently in the Coon Rapids High School location teaching preschool. And a little bit about my classes up there, 50% of my preschoolers are on a sliding fee scale. So our demographics at that location make for an interesting classroom and, you know, a lot of different skill levels coming in. During my school year, I've connected families with the home visiting program. I've referred them to the screening program because I can see their children need a little bit more. And, you know, we want to make sure they're ready for kindergarten. And also connected them with early childhood family education classes so that the parents can get more resources outside of the school readiness classroom also. In my four classes, I have over 15 languages or dialects spoken: Spanish, Vietnamese, Urdu, Swahili. If I could choose one language to learn and I think I could meet the needs of my children, I'd do that. But I can't do 15 different languages to help the preschoolers that I have in my classroom. As a teacher, I see the need for increased funding. We need more time with our students. A two-hour class two times a week is a great start, but it would be great to be able to offer longer classes and classes more often for families. And even to extend the school year. Right now we go middle of September to middle of May. That time from the middle of May to when they start kindergarten in September is a long time. If we could have funding to extend our school year, we'd better serve our young children that are in our classroom. In order to better meet the needs of our preschoolers, we need funds to purchase materials for our English language learning students and to purchase early childhood materials that reflect the skills the children need as they enter into kindergarten. Currently, the funding that we get covers consumables. We can buy paper, we can buy crayons, and we can buy paint. We don't have funding for materials in the classroom. I do a lot of garage sailing to better fill up our classroom, period. In addition to preparing children for the social and academic needs that they'll have in kindergarten, we also educate the parents on the importance of children being ready to learn and help the parents learn how they can better prepare their children. We connect the parent to the school in the early childhood years, and that connection carries. The more involved they are in the early childhood years, the more likely they are to be involved in the elementary school, middle school, and high school levels. School readiness prepares children for kindergarten and prepares parents for being an important part of their child's education. With increased funding, we can serve more families. We can prepare more children for success in school. We can strengthen families. Early childhood programs really set the foundation for success in the future. So I urge you to increase funding for our school readiness and young and programs that affect early childhood.
Thank you very much. You know, because we have two more testifiers, we're going to have to move on. But I want to thank you for talking about school readiness. I think it's something that this committee really needs to look at more closely. It's something that I think is sort of, we don't see as visibly as maybe some of the other programs, but it definitely has a huge impact on kids and their readiness for kindergarten, which is one of our goals here. So thank you for being here today. And Representative Portman, we will include a House File 327 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Karen Ephraim and Tom Pritchard to come up at the same time. And I officially have Dr. Ephraim first. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Karen Ephraim. I'm a pediatrician, mother of three children, and policy analyst for EdWatch. I'm here to, again, try to provide some other perspective on the research regarding the various programs that you're considering, and, again, to urge caution as you consider these programs. I'll start with Head Start. During the 40 years from its beginning in 1965 to 2005, this nation has spent $50 billion on 20 million children. During that time, there have been over 600 studies, and that was up until 1997. I'm sure there have been, I know there have been several more since then, but I don't know the exact number.
We've got a couple of minutes total,
yeah,
so make sure.
Okay. But all of these major studies, 1985, 1997, 2003, and the preliminary results of a major one released in 2005, have shown no long-term impact of the Head Start program, and I can give you details later.
Ms. Huffer, if you could give us copies of those, we'd sure appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you.
With regard to home visiting, a 1999 national review of six Prevent Child Abuse America studies found no success in reducing child abuse rates, high cost of $47,000 per family in 1999 dollars, and several concerns on parents' rights issues regarding unconsented medical reviews, not voluntary consent, low training amount for the visitors, information that is unbiased or not scientifically based, and data collection concerns, as well as Fourth Amendment concerns. In addition, a study in 2004 and 2005 also found no reduction in child abuse rates, and the one study that has been ongoing that is controlled that has had some significant improvements in maternal behavior found no impact on children's behavioral problems or emotional regulation, mother-child interaction, child's mental development, or the mother's educational achievement or employment. With regard to ECFE, I will refer to the Nonpartisan Legislative Auditor's Report of 2001 that said, quote, studies of two-generation programs have generally found small or no effects on child development, although many have reported some positive impact on parenting skills, end quote. And with regard to kindergarten readiness, there's the national study of kindergartners that found that 94% are proficient at recognizing numbers, shapes, and counting to 10, 92% are eager to learn, and 97% are in good health. Our legislative auditor said evaluations of the school readiness program have not provided definitive evidence of its effects. The department has sometimes declared that school readiness programs have a positive impact without acknowledging other possible explanations for the results of its evaluations. And I will also point out to you, Georgia has spent over $1 billion in 10 years and found no improvement in test scores, and Oklahoma, despite its early universal kindergarten readiness program, has actually seen a decrease in NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress, reading improvement. And I would be happy to go into any of this in more detail if there is time or at another time. But again, I urge caution and ask you to really look carefully at all the data, as well as promotes tax credits and the widest amount of parental choice possible.
Thank you. I suspect there will be another opportunity or we'll be continuing our dialogue. Mr. Pritchard, welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Pritchard. I'm president of the Minnesota Family Council. And I just want to make a few brief comments about for your consideration when you look at what to include in the omnibus bill. I think clearly the goal is helping children. We believe the best way to do that is empowering parents. We don't question the commitment and passion of Head Start advocates. You know, it's very real and sincere. We question, though, whether it's the best use of limited resources to continuing funding the same model when research suggests that the results of the programs aren't necessarily long-lasting. There's lots of money that goes into these programs, and a lot is being proposed through some of these bills. As far as alternatives, I think, again, we need to look at empowering parents. Grant them the resources through scholarships to go to the programs which best meet their needs. I think doing that would encourage innovation and alternative ways of helping parents get what they need. I see where Representative Slawick has a bill for establishing tax credits, HF 123. I think that empowers parents to get the services they deem best for their families. I think we need to look at ways of encouraging and empowering community mentors for families through a wide variety of programs, engaging churches and other community resources. I just don't think necessarily funding individual programs is the best way to really engage the community and individuals in a broader way, and I think ultimately empowering parents, which is where I think it's most important. I think we need to target those most at risk, and I think we need to be encouraging two-parent families. That needs to be in the mix. Two-parent households are incredibly important to children. Kids need fathers in their lives. That will reduce the financial stress on families and forcing parents to send both parents full-time into the workforce. All things being equal, parent care of their children is the best form of child care. I also believe that helping kids but then sending them back to dysfunctional families isn't the answer, and I'm afraid that that sometimes is what's happening. And finally, I think there needs to be accountability in the system. Representative Slawick, you also have a bill, HF 169, which talks about evaluating the effectiveness of programs, and I think that's really important. We need to do what's effective. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony today. Members, our committee meeting on Thursday is going to be about rural early childhood programs. We have half of the hearing will be Representative Ward is going to bring some folks from the Brainerd community, and they're going to be talking about what they do there to overcome barriers and are successful and also their challenges. And Representative Gottwalt will be sharing his Minnesota Initiative Foundation from his area. We'll be coming and talking about rural early childhood education programs with that. So thank you for a productive meeting. And with that, the committee is adjourned.